We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
ESPN at 9:20. So the big breaking news of the morning is that the United States will be hosting the World Cup. They won the decision by 134 votes to 65 over Morocco. And while you are sitting there, dear listener, and saying, oh, the United States, I mean, come on, against Morocco? Are you kidding me? It actually, I mean, well, first off, we lost to Qatar in 2022.
That's not a real place.
These decisions are not done on the level. Let's be frank, right? These are not, this is backroom deals. This is bribery. As a matter of fact, someone yesterday went through the list of people that made the decision for 2018 and 2022, giving it to Russia and Qatar, and it basically found that half the people have been banned from the sport, right? the people that made that decision were all so corrupt that they're basically all gone now.
Chris, do you think this will be maybe the most, I guess, quote-unquote, up-and-up World Cup in history only because of what the U.S. Justice Department did in their inquiry and, I believe, even jailings to a point or trials of FIFA
still
members?
Still ongoing, I believe.
And what went on. I mean, can FIFA actually operate above board? Like, do you think this will be an entirely new world for them, having to actually go to a place where someone will be looking and there will be oversight?
I think what has to happen is they have to make an amount of money to make it worth it, right?
Because if to be above board.
Right. Because to me, the thing that, first off, soccer, for as popular as it is around the world, is not nearly as commercialized as it is here. And frankly, they hate how commercialized we have our sports. And so to figure out ways to get the world on side with, hey, this is the most popular sport in the world, we have to make a ton of money off of this. And that's frankly the mandate that the new president that took over for Sepp Blatter came in with, is make us money, right? We'll vote you in again, because I think he promised to triple the amount of money that was distributed to the member nations. It's why the U.S. has won the World Cup today, because they're going to distribute $11 billion in revenue to the 208 member nations of FIFA.
But there will be 10 two-minute commercial breaks in the middle of every game. I mean, the whole U.S. concept of timeouts and all of that, it is such a different animal than we're used to in our sports. From the, as you know, from the soccer jerseys, the NBA this season allowed a 2-inch by 2-inch sponsor patch. Yeah. You might have noticed it during the NBA Finals. My wife couldn't even figure out the Goodyear logo with the Cavaliers wearing, because from a distance you couldn't really tell what it is. Mm-hmm. As you know from international,
it almost looks like an athletic sponsor.
She thought it was Nike or something like that. Yeah. As you know from international soccer jerseys, it's nothing but advertising, right, and MLS, the same thing.
The patch is the logo of the club, right, and the design advertisement on the front is an advertisement.
Is the whole thing there.
And if you watch soccer from like Mexico, you know, beneath the number there's a sponsor, above the number there's a sponsor, on the jersey sleeve there's a sponsor. I mean, it's everywhere. The jersey, like, they play like NASCAR jerseys.
The NBA has gotten the international basketball game to change. The lane size from the trapezoid, some of the other rules. Do you ever think, and when we've seen in a lot of international sports, there's been a lot of adjustments in hockey. They've adjusted also more Americanized, more universal rules. Do you think soccer will ever meet the U.S., at least what has been the world leader of everything, in the middle and change the game? Or do you think the U.S. has to go the MLS, the U.S. sport approach, like you mentioned in our previous hour, with academies, with forget the college system, with having, I guess, Chris, unless I'm wrong, 16-year-old professional athletes, 14-year-old professional athletes, 12-year-old professional athletes?
Well, I mean, that's getting a bit extreme. I think the minimum number is 15. And by the way, we're starting to see it. I cover the USL. Their broadcasting headquarters is out of Dania Beach.
Okay.
And there are a couple of what they call reserve teams. They're basically the second team for an MLS team. So LA Galaxy 2, for instance, they have a guy who starts for them most every week who's 15 years old.
How much money would someone like that make?
Probably not a lot of money, but yeah, like.
But give me a rough. I mean, do you have even a rough figure?
Because here's $40,000.
Okay, here's my question. You see this all the time from University of Florida, even University of Miami. I've seen Southern Cal, Pete Carroll, and he was there, how they've made offers to to youth football players 10, 12 years old. Usually it's just for the publicity and all of that. You are an inner city family, whether it's here in South Florida, whether it's in Compton, whether it's somewhere else. Someone comes to your house from what you just explained to me and said, your son is a heck of an athlete. I saw him running local track. I want to offer him, you just told me, $40,000.
I mean, I don't know. Don't quote me on that.
Okay, $20,000.
An amount of money.
Amount of money that the colleges are offering under a different guise. I just wonder how many families wouldn't take that money to have their son play for a youth soccer academy and also help them pay the bills.
Right.
I mean, it's a fascinating... That's what I was trying to talk about is the cultural change that could be in place where literally someone shows up at your front door with a bag of money and says, your kid is committed to me. Now, unless the NCAA changes, that forever in that sport makes that young person ineligible.
Yes.
Would colleges have to change for there to even be college soccer, where if you unless you've taken X amount of money or don't take a scholarship and pay your own way or something like that, that to me is where it could change the entire sports scene if this thing really grows. You've been the guy here. You know, Phil Shane at this station have always talked about the tentacles of soccer, how it has changed the world, like the apartment.com guy, right? That soccer has changed the way every sport is done. So you wonder now, with the U.S. being one of three North American nations to host the World Cup in 2026, whether that could change things. But I got to tell you, if I'm struggling for money and someone from a soccer academy shows up at my door with whatever the amount is, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 for my 14-year-old son, I think it's really hard to turn that down.
And by the way, it's the pressure of that is not wouldn't be unique to here. Like that is an argument that is had all the time. How basically the hopes and dreams of a family, you know, they're poor people obviously around the world, poor people in England, poor people in Italy, that their hopes and dreams get pinned on their 14-year-old being good at soccer, right? So there are certainly sort of problematic elements of that. But yeah, that's how it works around the world, right? You come into an academy team age 13 or 14, perhaps even young. I mean,
so you're talking 7th or 8th grade in schooling at that age.
Correct. And I think now you're starting to see, because of the money that's available, more and more players that are in academies in MLS right now that are foregoing college, right? They basically have been given a pathway to playing professional soccer as a 16 and 17 year old, and the club goes to them and say, we can keep paying you to do this, or we can start to pay you to do this, or you can go to college, right? And I think you're seeing more and more players deciding, well, I want to make money. Like I want to see out this professional career.
And then
if it doesn't work out, then I go to college.
Goran Dragic told me that education is included in that the kids who go to academy, they also arrange for their ongoing education.
Correct.
So it's not like you're foregoing high school or foregoing college, but that it's built into it.
I believe Philadelphia Union, which is one of the clubs in MLS, actually created a high school. That they only have like 80 students or whatever.
Oh, like where Michael Beasley went 5 different times. Yes, like with all of his... Michael Beasley used to go to high schools that were nothing more than the attic of someone's house just to wind up playing basketball.
But they built a real high school. They built a soccer high school, right?
Okay.
Where soccer is the priority, but you also will get your education, right? So like they're trying different things so that you can kind of stay within the construct. But realistically, the construct has to be totally destroyed in order for it to really work in this country, because like I said earlier, professional soccer players are if you look at the squads of players going to the World Cup, and you will see 19-year-olds, 20-year-olds, 21-year-olds and 22-year-olds littering the rosters of teams going to the World Cup. If the US went, they would have taken Christian Pulisic, who's 19, right? So the fact that players are so young, and you compare that to college age, if you're an NFL player, the youngest you can be, like the youngest NFL player you'll see is 20, right? The youngest NBA player you'll see is 19.
And then
at that point, they're sort of being given, all right, you'll get 2 or 3 years to learn your craft so that when you're 23, 24, you're ready to go. No,
right.
In soccer, 23, 24 is the prime of your career, right? That's when you should be at your very best. And so, yeah, like the complete and utter mentality shift that has to happen in order for the U.S. to really take that next step. It frankly, it's what Jurgen Klinsmann was working against. Jurgen Klinsmann knows all of this. Right. He wanted to change all of it, but he kept running up against it.
And
he kept basically running into people who are stodgy about their institutions and saying, no, we like the way that it is, and it works for our other sports, and we're going to apply this to soccer.
And then just to sort of bring people who are now in their car and driving around, going to work, just to update everyone, 2026, the United States, Mexico, and Canada will share the World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the U.S. didn't qualify this year, but as Chris has mentioned, and Chris has been on top of this story along with Adam Beasley and Omar Kelly, Chris, fill people in South Florida how it actually impacts them, especially Dolphins fans and Dolphins training facility. It just shows you the tentacles of soccer. Apparently, this has a major impact, seemingly, for those who enjoy going to Dolphins training camp, which they will about a month and a half or so.
Sure.
Go out there, watch the training camp sessions. Chris, apparently you won't be driving beyond 2022 to Davie anymore, and you might be going somewhere else?
That is correct. So the Miami Dolphins, obviously they've made major contributions to the sport of soccer in this community, and they have obviously built up the International Champions Cup. Stephen Ross has invested big time in the European aspect of the game, not necessarily in MLS. So the Dolphins are obviously linked with this bid. They're bidding to host a quarterfinal match of World Cup 2026, and for me, are definitely in with a chance to go and get one. Then, they're obviously the infrastructure that's required, right? So if Hard Rock Stadium gets two or three games to go and host, I think there's 17 American cities and 60 games to be played here.
Right.
So there's potential to get maybe three, even four games of this tournament to be played here in Miami. And so if a team wants to set up a base camp here where they're going to spend their group stage here, maybe even some of the knockout round here, then they can. And the two facilities that were offered up for it were an MLS Miami like sort of training facility, a camp for them, and we don't know where that's going to be or what Jorge Mas has in mind for that, and a future Miami Dolphins training facility that they include in the bid book that they say is going to be built in Miami. Now, when you travel, right, when you go to other places, even across America, and they say, where are you from? You know, and say, well, I'm from Pembroke Pines.
Right.
And you say,
no one's used the euphemism South Florida that we do. You say you're from Miami.
You say you're from Miami. So maybe Miami to the world means this thing will be Miami.
County area,
but it's actually in Miramar.
Right.
Or even a renovation of where they are now. But it says future Miami Dolphins practice facility. And it says
and
Miami.
And that's a key word because it says future. So it's not just like they're referring to a refurbished Davie.
Correct.
From what you read and what you interpreted when you were talking about on the station your other appearances, this sounds like a completely new facility. And sounds like, from what you read, not Davie, not Nova Southeastern, correct?
Right, yeah, because it says to be opened in 2022.
Okay.
So I'll go ahead and find it because I have it open here. But yeah, so it basically says future Miami Dolphins training site, Miami, Florida, scheduled to open in 2022. This future training site for the NFL Miami Dolphins will feature three pristine athletic fields, yada, yada, yada. But future Dolphins training site, Miami, Florida, scheduled to open in 2022. So the Dolphins will likely have a new practice facility. Oh, your colleague Omar Kelly has reported about negotiations with Miramar,
right,
potentially in the area of around Everglades High School, I believe.
On the western fringe of Broward County.
Correct,
yeah.
as a place to go and host this facility. So the Miami Dolphins certainly can be involved with this, and they will be involved with this if games are played at the stadium.
And
so,
the one thing we know about Stephen Ross, unlike some of the others, and we won't mention, he foots the bill.
Yes.
That when it came to redoing what's now Hard Rock Stadium, he footed the bill, just like Joe Robbie did when he built the facility. The other point of that is, and again, people might be going, why are you talking soccer in the Prime Sports Hour? It also has this impact on South Florida, and I know people are concerned about their pocketbook. There's also mention there of the new Brightline train system impacting people moving around, the crowds that'll be in town for training for soccer, but also Metrorail, which is a municipal operation and comes out of your tax dollars if you're listening in Miami-Dade County. So this is much more of an impact than this is more than, like, people will blow you off. As a matter of fact, they probably want to have you on the station the next 2 days. More than, you weren't scheduled anyway, more than just a soccer story.
Correct.
This is an NFL story. This is a South Florida story. This is a Miami municipality story. This also has the impact, unlike maybe as bad as the Olympics. We see the stories, Chris, all the time about how all these countries build Olympic facilities and then they rot away.
Yes.
The Olympic villages, and they become ghost towns. And these countries, Brazil, are on the hook for billions of dollars. With the infrastructure the U.S. has, maybe it'll change. But right now, from what you saw in the book there, and assuming extrapolating nationally, probably no new stadiums. That the infrastructure,
yes.
Every city you mentioned has a high quality, large volume soccer venue available. So you won't have that. But there will be infrastructure impacts in South Florida. There will be this new Dolphins facility, perhaps in Miramar, perhaps somewhere in Miami, which I find fascinating because at a time they can't even find a space for David Beckham's MLS soccer stadium.
Yep.
We're talking about finding now space also for a Dolphins practice facility. But I think the mayor now and the county manager can get involved now to say, well, since this is happening, we are offering up this land, because obviously you want that in your municipality. So there could be somewhat of a bidding war for a new Dolphins facility. All because of soccer. So for a guy like you, who has now babbled on for 2.5 hours on this and talks soccer all the time, this is really where this soccer effect you always talk about, where you always tell me that soccer is bigger geopolitically than just a sport.
Sure.
We're going to see that in South Florida. We're going to see the Dolphins out of Nova Southeastern, apparently, according to the bid book put together. And I really wonder, Chris, how involved Stephen Ross is going to be now also, because he has really become the soccer patriarch of South Florida.
Soccer patriarch, but also kind of a sporting patriarch as well, you know, trying to bring Formula One here, to bring in the tennis tournament here. Like, there's a lot of work to be done here. Chris Whittingham, Ira Winderman, in for Joe Rose and Zach Krantz here on QAM. Radio.com.
Radio.com. WQAM.
J.R. Smith in that game one where he was confused and he knew at the end. No, I'm just curious. Like, do you feel, are you guys laughing? Are you happy? Or do you feel like compassion for him after something like that happens?
Definitely not. I mean, I'm happy that he made that decision to, to do that, especially with the game on the line. We needed that win for the sweep.
Did you know at that point, once you guys won that game, because they really had a chance to steal that game, did you know that it was over?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we all did.
We had a good feeling. We knew we had to play well, but we knew we kind of broke them a little bit with that one.
If LeBron wanted to come to the Warriors next season, would you be excited about that? Or would you feel like, all right, this is now not fair. We're the Harlem Globetrotters here.
I just don't think that'll happen, man. I don't want to go there, you know?
Yeah.
Somebody's listening is going to write something, so.
Okay.
You know, I don't know. I'll stay on my side.
Chris Whittingham, Ira Winderman in for Joe Rose and Zach Krantz here on QAM. Here until 10 o'clock this morning. Ira, we talked a little bit about how the celebrations of the Warriors have been a little bit muted. I gotta tell you, listening to that clip, it sounded like Kevin Durant did some partying. His voice was a little hoarse, and it was a bit more casual. It sounded like he both hasn't slept and has done some partying.
That was Monday night, and the Warriors had their championship celebration in Oakland yesterday, something they've done now for 3 of the past 4 years. And yet it was so muted, Chris, when we got done with the show yesterday. I went back home and I was watching NHL Network and NBA TV, and simultaneously they were showing the 2 championship celebrations. And there was almost an arrogance from the Warriors is like, well, I hope you guys, you know, prepaid for your parking because you knew we would be here on this date with this celebration. 1, we were going to win the championship. 2, we were going to sweep the Cavaliers or anyone who came from the East. And you contrasted that to what happened in downtown Washington, D.C., with the Capitals and Alexander Ovechkin waiting for more than a decade and the Capitals waiting to finally get into the Stanley Cup final and what happened there. And when you listen to what happened with Alexander Ovechkin, I mean, it was a completely different from the cool, sort of subtle dig of Kevin Durant to Alexander Ovechkin seizing the moment.
It's basically nuts, you know, like, you guys killing it.
You just bring for us, for our families. Just happiness because they support as much as you are. They are all in. One and last thing. Before the year, us saying, we're not gonna be sucked this year. We're the Stanley Cup champions! Yeah!
So Drago wins the championship. That's there.
Magic.
He slays Rocky.
That is magic.
And all of Washington celebrates.
Alexander Ovechkin, the fact that it's been, what, 6 days or 5 days since they won the Stanley Cup? They won on Thursday night.
They won even before the NBA Finals were over, correct?
They won Thursday night, and they got the job done in Vegas. And the fact that about a week later, we're still enjoying the exploits of Alexander Ovechkin, I cannot get enough of him. If there is an Instagram story camera anywhere near him,
right,
I want to know what's going on with Alexander Ovechkin, because that dude is not going to start partying until like December. We'll be 2 months into the season, and he'll still be partying, and he'll still have a beer gut. I feel like he's going to be dreadful next season from how much he celebrated.
Just the hangover alone.
Yeah.
Do you think any other teammate will get to spend any time with the cup?
No. He
owns it.
He owns it, and if you spend any time with it, you just have to be around Ovechkin and get like 10 minutes with it while he goes to the bathroom.
If you've ever seen the cup and how they transport it, and they have the guy with the white gloves who brings it out, it's actually the guy who looks like the lead singer from Cheap Trick with the blonde hair and the whole deal.
There's a timely reference.
And you know what? I do what I can here. I'm sure they'll be playing the Pompano Amphitheater at some point soon anyway. So, and you see the reverence that they carry it out to the ice, and the reverence is skated, and then you've even seen it wind up in bed with Ovi already, and just the enjoyment. And that's why, Chris, we were talking in one of the earlier hours about the Golden State Warriors and whether it's good for the NBA. You and I over the last 2 weeks have discussed the Cavaliers playing the Warriors 4 years in a row. Look at the freshness we've seen in the Stanley Cup Finals this year. The Golden Knights, Vegas Golden Knights, and the Capitals getting there. You remember last year the Nashville Predators and the catfish on the ice and how much it's meant to them also.
Right.
It really delivered something. And that's why me, even as an NBA person, I just do wonder. We spoke about the economics. We spoke about ownership in the front office is going to do everything to keep the Warriors together, even if it means paying Draymond Green $34 million a year on a $250 million new contract. But is what we've gone through in the NBA, I know you love technically good sports, soccer, basketball, mm-hmm. anything else. You saw it on display for four games in the finals from the Warriors. Is the NBA going to wind up with a bit of Warriors fatigue? And do you think we've already are coming off a bit of finals fatigue?
It hasn't happened yet. So we've had four Warriors-Cavs finals, and they're all like the highest rated finals since like the Shaq-Lakers were in the finals. So the fact that the interest is still there for me. Now, if it's a fifth time and a sixth time, I think the fact that LeBron is probably going to leave and go somewhere else,
right,
it'll spruce things up a little bit.
If they play the Celtics next
correct.
Year, if Kyrie and Gordon Hayward
sure.
and Tatum and Jaylen Brown
to
are
me,
there.
It's a whole new dynamic, right? And then you'll probably, if LeBron goes to the West, then he'll have played LeBron in the West. So I think that you'll see an uptick in interest and in conversation. To me, the thing, though, that is surprising, and obviously, you know, hockey is just a less ingrained in our culture sport
sure.
than basketball is. But their playoffs are better.
Yes.
Their games are better. The moments are better. The celebrations are better. And, like, to me, it's surprising that it's not just that hockey is way off. I'm like, they're off of basketball. They're way off of basketball.
Like
the average viewership for the games of the finals was 5 million people. Like that was the for their champ, and that was a good number for them, by the way, in recent years. 5 million compared to the average, I think it was like 20 million for the finals. Like they're a fourth of the NBA, and so I'm just kind of surprised that with all that hockey has to offer from a sporting point of view, that they fail so largely in telling the stories of their players, in getting you interested in movement, and the fact that their playoffs is kind of if March Madness were seven game series. You have no idea. Like there's no home ice advantage. There's no idea night to night who's actually going to win.
Right.
And you go into a playoffs feeling legitimately that any of the 16 teams that are going into that run of the playoffs
with the hot goalie
can
win. Like Pecoretti last year with Nashville.
Any of them can win.
Right. And that's the difference also. And again, you have a good point there is telling the stories. Don't you feel like you know more about Alexander Ovechkin over the last week mm-hmm. than you've known about his entire career
yes.
leading to this
and he's
moment?
He's a sensational player.
He is.
He's been the second best player of this generation behind Crosby.
Beyond Crosby right there. As opposed to, let's take a Kevin Durant. You knew Kevin Durant in Seattle. You knew Kevin Durant in Oklahoma City.
You knew Kevin Durant in Texas.
Right. I'm saying you know him for all of these stages
yeah.
along the way. But to me, to sort of bring this back to where I was starting with, the fact is that you could see the great emotion of a new champion, of something different, of another player coming on to the transcending his sports stage, as opposed to the coolness of Kevin Durant talking to Jimmy Kimmel, as opposed to if you watch the NBA celebration when they were up there in the podium in Oakland, it was more of a discussion about what's coming next. Mm-hmm. They were talking about contracts.
Yeah.
They were talking about holding this team together.
Yeah.
The GM, Bob Myers, there said, I'm going to give a blank check to Kevin Durant. They actually asked him during the celebration, did you really mean that? And they made their jokes about contracts, about the business of the sport at that moment. That's why, to me, I don't know what you do about it. I agree. Over the years, you and I have spoken about the Yankees, the Cowboys, the dominant teams in sports. You love to love them. You love to hate them, but you still want to have that. But I think the NBA, I don't know if it's a hard cap. I mean, that's one thing, football. Football, with its scheduling change, and it changes softer or harder schedule depending on where you finish, and its hard cap, always delivers at least one something new to the Super Bowl mm-hmm. every year.
Yeah.
And to the playoffs, it gives you the Tennessees and the Jacksonvilles
sure.
and the unexpected kind of things. I'd like to see more than that. Then, Chris, I think you'd agree. It's sort of like in European soccer. There is the chalk. There is the Man Cities. There's the Real Madrids. There's the mm-hmm. Barcelona. They're
yeah.
going to be there every year. The NBA sort of got in like that also. You know from your European soccer leagues, there's probably more teams concerned about relegation
yeah.
than with a legitimate chance of winning the premiership of whatever
yeah.
their league is there.
That's why Leicester winning the league was such a giant, defiance of the odds. A team that was up for relegation winning the championship, because you have to do it over 38 games. It's not a one-off tournament. Like if basketball had, If they really wanted to change the way
they would do a one game
right, yeah.
NCAA type
right, or
tournament.
Even like a three game series or something like that. Like
it, but we know it has to be systematic through a hard cap or something mm-hmm. else like that. People still ask me all the time, why won't Mickey Arison spend when the Warriors went out and signed Kevin Durant? Like they don't get the salary cap
correct.
At all. One of my Ask Ira questions at SunSentinel.com that I didn't use today was, why don't the Heat just spend more and get LeBron? Why are they worried about the tax and worried about the cap? Because
yeah.
it doesn't work that way yeah. and people don't understand.
What if we got rid of everything? We just got rid of hard cap.
Max salary. That's what Stan Van Gundy said. If you didn't have a max salary,
mm-hmm.
okay, then you couldn't afford to have two or three of those players.
Yeah.
If you had a cap and no max salary, you would have to decide who your guy is. Matter of fact, I'm going to ask you this question. The salary cap for next season is $101 million in the NBA. So LeBron James is a free agent. You are starting from scratch because every year everyone becomes a free agent. Your cap is $101 million. How much of that $101 million would you offer to LeBron?
I'll answer that question next.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
Confirming a theory that I had.
Okay.
That LeBron would be playing until his son could come into the NBA. And I feel like he's going to set himself up to be a free agent. Now, I think he's going to try and plan and perhaps even lobby the commissioner, Adam Silver, to allow high school players to go straight into the NBA and straight into the draft. And he's going to engineer a way.
Which might be that time frame anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
He's going to engineer a way to after, that team gets the number one pick, whichever team gets the number one pick.
Right.
Or maybe, Bronny forces a trade somewhere.
Sure.
That LeBron goes to play play at least one season with his son.
Or failing that, and obviously he's a friend of the station and a friend of Mr. Zagacki, we get Coach L to recruit Bronny here to play
man.
In Miami to start the whole thing. Then LeBron can come down and play with the Heat. Then his son can make the natural segue. So maybe we need to do that also. And here's the interesting thing, and it was just posted yesterday on Twitter. Dwayne Wade's sons will start, Zaire will start getting offers this year
okay.
as he heads into, I believe, his senior year. year of high school. So you sort of wonder where that's going to lead him also, and whether...
Is Zaire's going to high school?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, so he'll be a senior next year, so he's...
I believe so.
So he's
so
class,
2 years. I think
so 2020. Class of
2020. Something like that. My timing might be off a year, but it's just amazing how these kids have reached that age in the first place, and when you go on beyond that... Just you do wonder, like, you know, when it comes to the, like you were mentioning, the one and done rule, and when it stops, is it could be a real different life than their dad's, because it's, you know, people have asked me also, when's that going to happen? And I say, I hope it doesn't happen in 2021 for this reason. The Heat's first round pick goes to the Suns unprotected from the Goran Dragic trade. The first year it's allowed, you will effectively have two draft classes. The last draft class forced to play 1 year of college, the grade one and dones like we're having this year, like DeAndre Ayton and guys like that coming out, plus the top high school class also. If it's 2021, that pick the Heat gave up is going to be a monster pick. Unless the Heat are deep into the first round, mm-hmm. you're literally going to have 1 year coming up, two full draft choices, because, you know, you go to Hoops Hype or you go to NBADraft.net, they already have next year's lottery listed, and it's nothing but kids who are in high school who, when this thing ends, and it will end, Adam Silver has basically said that, the players union has said they've always wanted that anyway, so it's going to be interesting to see what year that happens, but there will be a double draft coming up, and it'll be really interesting, because if it's 2021, mm-hmm. the Heat will be in a heck of a pickle.
Yeah, and they might have to start trading for first-round picks, but those first-round picks might get more expensive. But I do want to answer the question that you posed to me. I did remember this time. I'm normally terrible at this, where we tease something, and then I forget to get to it.
Yes.
I've remembered.
You've taught me how to not do radio over these last 2 days, and I thank you for that.
So the max salary limits the earning potential
right.
of a LeBron James, right? So let's say...
And also, as I was referring to before we went to the break, Stan Van Gundy's point has always been, if you have a salary cap but didn't have an individual maximum you could earn per year, it would level the playing field.
Mm-hmm. Because you'd have an equal distribution of talent.
Because you couldn't have Curry and Thompson and Durant mm-hmm. and Draymond.
They would probably all be on their individual teams,
as
right?
we were talking yeah. about earlier, debating now that Draymond will be up next year for his max salary, how tough it's going to be for the Warriors. But the NBA does allow you to exceed the cap to keep your own players.
Sure.
But there's also a locked-in maximum. So the question I asked Chris before the break, thank you for reminding me of the radio format, was this. If there was no maximum salary, next season's NBA salary cap will be $101 million. LeBron, let's use him as an example. So every team salary cap at the moment is zero. They're all starting again.
Sure.
It really would be the ultimate bidding war, more than Otani mm-hmm. or anything like that.
Right.
How much, Chris, would you, you're building a team, you're Pat Riley, the hair looks marvelous, you're putting together a team, how much would you offer in the first year of a contract with a $101 million team salary cap, no individual player maximum for LeBron?
$65 million.
And yet I think teams would go even higher.
Yeah.
And teams would say, the lesson I've learned...
But do you think LeBron would take the full amount? Because then he'd be playing on a team that's bad, right? He couldn't then surround himself with good players. Like, what do you think is the most that he would take?
I know it'll be a different league, but LeBron with Kevin Love and trash beyond that has made the NBA Finals mm-hmm. the last 4 years anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd say then players might want to play for him because there wouldn't be as much money spread around. Like, I was almost wondering if your answer was going to be 90, 95, maybe 100, and everyone else takes minimum. That to me is where the league could really... This discussion came in the previous hour mm-hmm. when I was saying if the NBA would rebalance itself like the NFL and have that type of parity, the two things I would do is I would go to an unbalanced schedule. I would give the lesser teams a softer schedule the following year to lift them up like the mm-hmm. NFL. I think that works in the NFL. You always talk to me, we always talk about, where they're playing a fifth-place schedule.
Yes.
So they get that break. Yes, you still get your traditional rivalries, two games against everyone in your division. You get a specific division in each conference that you play on a calendar cycle anyway, but it levels the field. I think this would level the field. Now, I don't know what locker rooms would be like when one guy's making $90 million and the other guy's making $565,000. Not that anyone's going broke in that situation right. anyway, but that to me is So let's say LeBron wanted to play with another star. Let's take this a little further, Chris Whittingham, okay? LeBron realizes it's no longer a league of big threes because there's no maximum salary. But you need two guys. So now, all of a sudden, remember how the Heat big three came together when Dwayne basically illegally recruited Bosh and Durant and James ahead of time? I think we all know that. That the Heat
is that illegal?
No, that's always the gray area that GMs yeah. can't do it, teams can't do that, coaches can't do that, but players, you know,
sure.
like the Adam Silver and David Stern before said about that, we know the players talk anyway, so who are we kidding? So let's say LeBron said, I want to play with you, Kevin Durant. We're each going to take $45 million of our $101 million salary cap and do it that way. I think that'd be a fascinating dynamic. It would be like how you guys, not me, but draft your fantasy football teams.
You don't do fantasy football?
I don't do fantasy football, especially the kind though where you have to pay X amount to pick a player as opposed to a draft.
Oh, an auction draft. I love an auction draft.
Right. So I'm saying I listen to all these guys. It seems to be more of a baseball thing than a basketball mm-hmm. thing with auction drafts, but I'm always fascinated when people are talking to me this year about Ohtani and how much you would spend because of the extra numbers you would get for him. Mm-hmm. I think NBA teams would be played that way also. Players would have their own mini auction draft. I think that'd be fascinating. It would be the ultimate cultural divide salary-wise, but on the other hand, mm-hmm. I think that would balance out the NBA. I think literally.
Because I think there would be a team that would be, okay, instead of going and spending $60 million on LeBron or $70 million on LeBron, we're going to get seven guys at $13
million. That's what the Heat has now.
But it doesn't work now for the Heat because there are teams that have figured out to both get superstar talent plus supporting cast. If you're saying that there's this even distribution of dollars.
$101 million hard cap,
then if you're paying LeBron $65, then you're not going to get top quality players when there are dollars available in other places.
Or
to go
do
and
you
play
have
with
a
decent team
or a younger player like
because,
Kevin Durant?
Because the thing about the system is that it kind of rewards the decent, right? It rewards the good.
Yes.
Because if you're paying $60 million for one player, you're probably going to surround him with terrible.
In society, the destruction of the middle class has led to a destruction of society to a degree. It's the opposite in the NBA. Pat Riley said, we have too many good to great players. When I think he meant we have too many mediocre to good players, but I'll leave that be anyway. But that's the problem with the Heat, is that everyone is getting $12 to $15 million among Deion Waiters and Kelly mm-hmm. Olynyk and yep. James Johnson.
They've got nine guys.
Right, in the middle. And they're stuck in the middle, where I think what you have to do is you have to have top and bottom to really excel in this league, as the Warriors have shown, as the Cavaliers have shown, as the Harden and Chris Paul Rockets have shown. Now, maybe in the scenario we gave, a guy like Kevin Durant says, I'm in my prime, I want at least $50 million. A guy like LeBron says, I've made enough money, winning matters more to me now than salary. I'm going to be a $25 million guy, and I'll play with you. That'll be our $65 million chunk over 101. That's how I think you rebalance it, unless, Chris, and we started this discussion from the standpoint, you think the Warriors are great, and you think as long as they keep showing up at NBA Finals, it's a good thing for the NBA.
I don't think it's necessary.
A bad thing.
I think it's good on a national basis, right, where nationally they're an interesting team, and so everyone wants to watch them. But locally, if you care about your team, it's not great. If you're a Sacramento Kings fan, you're just like, what the hell do we do?
So I understand what you're saying, that in Kansas City and Wichita and Amarillo and places mm-hmm. that don't have teams, they just want to see the best series. They have no.
Right. Or even if you are in a local, if you're a Miami, like Miami watches the finals, you're sitting down at television, what am I going to watch tonight? Oh, there's a great game on tonight.
Right.
Because Golden State playing whoever is probably going to be, at the very least, the highest level or a compelling game, and you watch it with the hopes that it'll be close and fun at the end. I don't think, you know, there are stars involved. There are people you know and want to see. That, if you kind of evenly distributed the talent, that might kind of dilute that a little bit, where there aren't these marquee
matchups
that you want to see.
But I get the opposite. I get the Ask Ira people at SunSentinel.com who go, Ira, we should rebuild from the start because we're not going to beat the Warriors mm-hmm. in the next 2, 3, 4 years anyway. You and I, we had our discussion yesterday. We'll get back to it after the break about either championship or it's not worth being in.
Yep, no doubt. Chris Whittingham, Ira Winderman, in for Joe and Zach here on QAM. Oh,
O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.